Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. It is fit that we begin this new year with a conversation with a man who was gracious enough to allow us to begin this program some 8 years ago with an interview with him. He is Dr. Daniel Pipes, a man I have regarded for a long time, both as a great friend and an inspiration, a mentor, a leader in this war for the free world in many capacities, notably in the role he has played with great distinction for a couple of decades, as I recall, as the founder and president of the Middle East Forum, a terrific resource, not just on the Middle East, truthfully, but on more broadly, the things that are at stake in this war against specifically jihad and those who propound it in furtherance of Sharia. Daniel Pipes is the author of some 16 books, including most recently Nothing Abides. Daniel Pipes, welcome and happy new year to you.
Thank you, Frank. And same to you. And it's an honor to start this year as I did this series as a whole. To be more accurate, our organization should be the Middle East Forum and Islamism Forum, but that'd be a little awkward. So we do Islamism in general and the Middle East.
There we go. Well, you cover a broad waterfront as a result. Speaking of Islamism, there is some perturbations in the force happening at the moment in the Iranian Republic. Talk a little bit about what you think is going on there, Daniel. Is there likely to be, in fact, a revolution that, with support this time from the United States, could affect regime change, or is that way too much to hope for?
Briefly put, the Iranian people have been almost 40 years under the rule of the Khomeini-style government, and the Iranians don't like it. And my estimate is some 85% of Iranians are alienated, estranged from the regime. It is somewhat reminiscent of the Soviet Union in the 1970s, a powerful and aggressive state that's hollow because so few of its subjects like what the state is doing. And therefore, it's vulnerable, it's rickety. It could fall at any moment, like the Soviet one did. Is this the moment? Probably not. It might be, but probably not. But just as the 2009 rebellion was suppressed, and this one may well be suppressed, the antagonisms that are being suppressed won't go away. They'll be even stronger, and they'll come back at some future date. There's going to be a rebellion that will overthrow this regime at some point.
You know, it's fascinating that you make that connection. Of course, you in your own right and your father, Dr. Richard Pipes, played heroic roles in bringing down the Soviet Union at a time when most people didn't think it was rickety at all. I'm struck by how fragile these totalitarian regimes often are, and the circumstances may, as you say, not quite be ripe yet, but the conditions are developing. I was in a meeting yesterday with our colleague Claire Lopez, who talked about the size of the majority now of the Iranian population that is quite young, and how plugged in they are to information sources from outside of Iran that are, you know, feeding these appetites for change and getting out from under the brutal sort of theocratic misrule of the mullahs. It's an exciting time, and I hope it will continue to be the case that President Trump and his team will encourage regime change on the part of its people.
Let me just add that the enormous amount of money that the U.S. government handed to the Iranian government in the last couple of years in connection with the Iran deal could, in the long term, be detrimental to the Iranian regime, ironically, because expectations were increased. And also, as you mentioned, connections to the outside world were increased as a result of that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to give Barack Obama credit for trying to do that, needless to say. But let me turn to something else, Daniel. You have been really extraordinarily thoughtful, and I'm hoping influential, with an initiative that the Middle East Forum launched last year. I believe it started with a Congressional Victory Caucus and now has a counterpart in Israel. I'd like you to talk a little bit about that, but do it in the context, Daniel Pipes, of this decision by the president to move our embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, and whether this might at least be the first steps towards the adoption by the United States government of sort of the victory strategy you've been calling for.
Recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel is a very important step in what we call Israel victory. The dominant paradigm for the last 30 years has been that the Israelis and Palestinians talk to each other and work out a compromise, and this eventually leads to resolution of the problem. A good idea in theory. The problem has been that the Palestinians have been unwilling in any way whatsoever to accept Israel, the Jewish state. They take the benefits of these negotiations but give nothing in return. And yet, for decades now, the pressure has been on Israel to hand over yet more and more and more to no effect. So what we're doing is suggesting that these negotiations are premature. The Palestinians have not accepted Israel as a Jewish state, and therefore the emphasis must be now on getting Palestinians to accept Israel. And looked at in a historic way, one notes that conflicts end when one side gives up. What we look for is a U.S. government that says to the Israelis, fight your conflict as we fight ours. Defeat your enemy. Cause your enemy to give up his goals. And impose your will on your enemy. And do this within moral, practical, and legal constraints. But do it. Go ahead. The move of the embassy to Jerusalem is a tacit recognition of this idea. That instead of waiting and waiting and waiting, we say to the Israelis, we're going to help you convince the Palestinians that Israel as a Jewish state is there and is permanent.
And so I would think would be the course of action that seems to be being brooded in the Trump administration of cutting off the funding for the Palestinian Authority from the U.S. taxpayer, and perhaps the U.N. Work and Relief Agency, the agency that props up their whole refugee narrative. Would you agree that those are steps that should also be taken in this strategy?
I enthusiastically agree, yes. The Palestinians need to be put on notice that the behavior of the past three decades is unacceptable. There needs to be a fundamental shift. And because that hasn't happened, therefore the monies will be taken away from them, and other steps such as the Jerusalem recognition will take place. This will get their attention in a way that nothing else has. They have simply not changed. You know, 1994, Yasser Arafat recognized Israel on the White House lawn, but that didn't happen. It was a fraud. It needs to become real. And these are steps that the U.S. government can take. They're limited. The Israeli government is the one that really has to enforce this.
Very quickly, let me ask you, because what I think has often happened is that the Israeli government has come forward and said, oh, no, 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 don't cut off the Palestinians. Don't cut off the UNRWA. Is that likely to be a problem in this instance as well?
It's a big, complicated topic, but the essence of it is that the Israeli security forces are basically police forces, and they're in the business of protecting Israeli lives. They're not in the business of winning. They're in the business of protecting. The military is out to win. The police are out to defend. And because they have this protective, defensive quality, they're scared of anything that might disrupt the status quo, such as cutting off the money and any other steps. And they just want to keep things as it is. It's better this than having a new intifada or having the Palestinian Authority collapse and so forth. They're a very conservative force. They don't want to see any change. And they have great influence in Israeli circles. And indeed, they are, from the point of view as of this Israel victory idea, the one of the main obstacles to achieving it because they are so conservative.
I am generally in favor of conservatism, but in this case, it seems to be misplaced or at least short-sighted. Daniel Pipes, your clarity on what needs to be done is extraordinarily appreciated. Daniel, thank you for your time today, for helping us kick off this program, and for helping us launch the new year 2018. I hope it's a great one for you, and that you'll come back to us often in its course. Next up, we'll talk with Diana West about a coup against President Trump and who might be behind it. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.